I guess the question that comes up is, what can the average person do? Obviously, this is a project that involves a lot of professionals and a lot of different agencies, but what can the average person who's just concerned about these issues do about what's going on?
You know, that's a great question. And really, there are several things. The first thing is for all of us to stop thinking about mental health as if it's something that applies to other people. Because we all have mental health, just like we have our dental health and our physical health. And one of the best ways that I've heard to think about it is that mental health is like a quality that we all have, like a piece of furniture has the quality of levelness. So every table, for example, has some degree of levelness. And when it's really level, nobody even pays much attention to it. We take it for granted. But when we see some kind of a wobble in it, it can be irritating, or it can get to the point where the table's just not usable at all and doesn't function well. And so that's the way that I have come to think about our mental health. The other thing about that analogy that's really useful is that there are a lot of reasons that a table can be wobbly, can be unlevel. It can be that the table was made a little different and it doesn't set square. It could be that the floor isn't even. It could be both. And so there are all kinds of treatments. Some of the interventions that we do address the floor. Some address the table. Some of them address both of them. And what we find is that if you've got a little wobble in your table, it's not going to fix itself. You're going to have to do something. And we do generally feel compelled to do something when we've got some kind of a wobble like that. So we find people who know how to fix furniture, how to level floors. And that's what we encourage people to do, is to think about their mental health as any other aspect of their functioning and not be afraid to go out and find somebody who knows how to level furniture. And I think the second thing that we can do is really encourage one another to look at it that way. You know, nobody's ashamed to hire a plumber to come in and do the plumbing at their house. Nobody's worried about somebody seeing the plumbing van outside their house. And nobody's embarrassed if they don't do that well with their finances and they rely on their accountant to help with that. But we have in our culture, in our community, a stigma around paying somebody to help us with our own mental health, with our own functioning. And I think those are two really powerful things that every listener can do. Now, the other thing is that we've come to identify in this initiative that there are some essential components for it to work. And frankly, if doing something like this was easy, everybody'd be doing it. But we're doing something that is really complex and powerful. And we have identified that there are some elements that in the larger plan that have to be there if it's going to be successful, but they are things that have no funding source. Well, for example, when you do something, you find a really powerful intervention to provide to a child, if you're providing that intervention to every single child in the county, an intervention that's $5 for this one kid turns into a $50,000 investment, right? So these prevention efforts that are really for all 0 to 18-year-olds, there's a price tag associated with them that no insurance company is going to pay for example. So that's one such example, and there are others as well. And so when this grant funding concludes, we are really going to, as a community, have to look at ways to come together as churches and community groups and professional groups and others to contribute to fill in those holes for these things that must be there for it to be successful, and yet there's no readily identifiable funding source to maintain those.
And of course, when it comes to funding, especially if you're asking for grants or looking to any kind of agency, whether it's privately run or publicly run, you run into that same stigma, I'm guessing, to walk in and say, well, it's about children's mental health. And I'm guessing there are a lot of people who are simply going to say, well, that's way too complicated. It's going to cost way too much money. Or just they'll grow out of it. What's the problem?
You know, I think that one thing that people really can come around is children. And I think if people stop and think about it, we know that one child with a problem, you know, one even adult in our community who looks to violence to solve a problem affects every one of us. If you think about, you know, one person driving under the influence can devastate a community. And so if we look at it that way, that we are all really affected by not only our own mental health, but other folks' mental health every day, people can get around it. One of the things that I think is difficult is that grants are good for startup. When you're getting something going, once you've got a successful and running initiative where all the wheels are in motion, it's much, much harder to get grant funds to sustain something that's already working. This whole project that we've designed, we have looked everywhere for every possible funding source for the elements that we've been implementing. And at the same time, the economy has been, you know, really pretty pathetic. And so at the same time that all these resources are being cut, you know, the reimbursement for even insurance and Medicaid and things like that never did really cover the services, the cost of services, but that has been routinely cut over the last few years. And so we have resources in the community and all of them are being brought to bear on this. And I really believe that if the listeners know what's going on and understand how this whole project, this whole initiative is serving their children and other members of the community, that they're going to be motivated to come around and keep all these wheels in motion.
And, of course, for people who are concerned about money, as you mentioned earlier, if you catch a situation as it's developing, it may be something as simple as teaching someone a coping strategy, whereas if it brews over the course of most of a person's childhood, it becomes a much more profound and difficult problem to solve.
You are so right. You know, there have been a number of studies that look at a dollar in prevention can save $100 later. There are just multiple studies like that that reinforce what it is that we're trying to do.
I guess the idea that occurs to me is if people feel like they need help right now. I mean, obviously, these are things that a lot of seeds have been planted. A lot of things are already growing. But if people have a problem and they feel like they need to talk to someone immediately, are there resources already available?
Absolutely. If there are any listeners that feel like their child needs counseling right now, or if they want support with further parenting, they want to learn some new interventions and strategies, they can go ahead and call the Institute for Human Resources and get support right away. That number is 815-844-6109, and they can access services in the same way that they always have been able to through IHR.
A lot of times agencies are accused of being too quick to medicate, especially when it's an issue involving a child. And Ritalin, of course, has taken a lot of heat. A lot of other drugs have been prescribed and questioned. A lot of parents are just violently opposed to medicating their children. What is your position? What's the organization's position on medication?
The way that we have set up our initiative is to look at both things that are issues internal to the child. For example, the child's own skills at managing anger or whatever the issue is, and also what's the environmental context. In other words, what are the kinds of scenarios where the child does his or her best functioning? And so many of our interventions are actually looking at that environment and how to build a climate where the child does their best. And so the interventions that we look to first are all of those kinds of things. One of the things that has been really valuable is that in the past, oftentimes the physicians felt like that was really all they could do, is either offer a prescription or not. And so now they have these avenues to screen a child, to refer a child for support. And if they're thinking that a medication might be the route to go, they can actually consult directly with the psychiatrist who comes to IHR. And that psychiatrist can guide them through whether or not a medication is appropriate, and if so, how to determine what is the right medication and the right dosage. So there are all of these elements in the initiative that really look at prevention and early intervention so that children really don't need medication. But if a child really does need medication and would benefit from it, there are structures in place to make sure that they get the right medication and that it is not more than what they need.